Makoto, no mai haere mai ki Kick Arts, Auckland's comprehensive art show brought to you every Sunday night here at Planet FM 104.6 or live stream planetaudio.org.nz. Call Richard Green Tenor, your host for the next 90 minutes, where we have a studio full of amazing guests involved in the arts in Tamaki Makaurau at the moment. I hope you've had a lovely weekend out there in the sunshine and the joy of the summertime in Auckland once again, with more cyclones and rain. And I'm wondering if any of you got out to 660 last night. I could hear it from my house, and it sounded pretty amazing. Pretty amazing concert, 50,000 people crammed into Western Springs. You don't, the unusual thing for a New Zealand band to fill Western Springs with that many people, that just sort of shows you where they are with respect to icons in our music industry. We will be playing a couple of tracks from them sometime this evening, I'm not really sure. Well, I need to familiarise myself with some of their latest sounds, actually. I haven't listened to them for a while, so it'll be a bit of a revisit. And Georgia's not here tonight again, my co-host. She'll be back again next week, but she's busy, as always, doing stuff. And she just closed a play called Tide Waits for No Man last night at the Basement Theatre. I had the privilege of going to closing night, and what an amazing, beautiful piece of theatre it certainly was. It was a non-verbal piece with amazing puppetry and dance and movement, and it was great. My mini review is go and see it, but it closed last night, but I'm sure it will come back again. But it's one of those pieces. I was very disappointed to see the house wasn't as good as it could have been, and actually people there, are some proudly Asian theatre, are doing some amazing stuff in Auckland, and you should get along and see it. It really is kind of edgy, groundbreaking stuff that we don't always get to see. So that's my shout out. Go and support. There's all sorts of work. Walk. They're seeing Bahana Hanya. That didn't work. I'll try that again. Rewind. There's all sorts of amazing work happening in Auckland at the moment. We've got everything from puking love to dance plants to dancing in the streets, lecturing me in your house. There's all sorts of things. I'm going to introduce our guests one at a time because it's too hard to do it all the time. We've got five amazing women in the studio. I'm going to start with Amy Mansfield. Welcome, Amy.
Kia ora.
Now, I didn't invite you here to lecture me, by the way.
I didn't invite you here to lecture me.
Which is the name of your play.
That's right.
Yeah, which is, and unusually, people invite you into their home for the piece, and that's where the performance takes place.
That's right. We've got seven houses around Auckland where it's being held, and we're doing one public performance at Time Out Bookstore in Mount Eden as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been in Mount Eden so far, in Kohimarama. We've got Glen Dowie, Sandringham and Westmere to go. So
a little mini tour.
That's right. It's sort of a new venue each night. Pack in, pack out. We just arrive with a whole bunch of chairs and a lectern and a couple of other little props, and Bob's your uncle.
Bob is your uncle, and you can explain to us what it's about, because okay. I'm fascinated by that. I often ask people not to lecture me, but you know, it doesn't always work. Now, Dance in Parks, Cindy and Carleen, welcome.
Hello.
Is this like, did I see something just last week about this? People dancing, just a spontaneous dance thing? Was that dancing?
No, that was just with the Fringe Festival. I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just with the Albert Eden Local Board and Creative New Zealand that's just funded, our idea.
So the idea is that people just turn up and dance?
Yes, and also there's free workshops as well as performances, and also just to bring the communities together in the Albert Eden community area. Yeah.
Wow. And where did the concept come from? Was it, whose brainchild is this?
I think I said the first kind of line of why is there movies in parks and music in parks and like, but not dancing in parks? And so I've just said that, and then I was just applied for funding, and then it happened, and it's happening. So yeah, and then Carleen just really helped me with getting it all together and bringing it all into life.
Yeah. So you're a dancer?
Yes.
Are you a dancer, Carleen?
Yes, I'm a dancer, and I have a group who will be performing in the aerial dance event of the program.
Wow. Aerial?
Yeah.
So that means you have to build stuff, or is that Ariel from the Little Mermaid dance thing?
No, the first time.
Oh, good. Oh, phew. I'm not a fan.
Underwater
not
park.
Not a fan. Yeah, yeah. You haven't got the Evenelden pools.
Yeah. No, but amazingly, if you think about parks, they often have structures where young people can climb and hang off, but they're just usually not seen as performance spaces. So that event is happening just down the road from where we are at the moment, at Coyle Park.
Okay.
And they have an amazing rope structure playground there. So usually you just sort of see kids climbing all over it and doing the fun things that kids do on a playground, but we are sort of taking that a little bit further with a group of young acrobats and getting them to make work just for that playground equipment.
That's incredible. I'm a big fan of Coyle Park.
Yeah.
I'm too scared to go up the rope thingy, though. It's a little bit tall for me.
We might have an event to inspire you to
maybe get off
the ground.
Yeah, maybe I'll go up a couple of feet and see how I go. Do you tie things? Is it aerial as in silks or straps?
Well, that's kind of what's beautiful about the piece of playground equipment is we don't have to do anything to it to make it something that can be hung off and climbed off, because obviously that's what it's intended to be used for, but we're just putting more of a performative focus to it. And with the group of young people that are performing at that event, that's their vocab, is hanging off things and climbing off things. And
what a job,
What
a job. What do you do for a living? I just climb and hang off things.
Yeah.
I saw Cirque du Soleil last week. Have you seen that?
Yeah. We went the other week as well.
Enjoy that?
Yeah.
Speaking of hanging off things and climbing on things and spinning on things, it was just incredible. But hair raising at some moments.
So yeah.
As you can see, my hair hasn't gone down since. Jazz, desperate late night energy. Looks like you haven't got much. They haven't got desperate late night energy at the moment.
I've always got a bit of desperate late night energy.
Now you're part of the Dance Plant Collective. What are you? Doing a piece as part of the Fringe?
It's part of Auckland Fringe Festival. We were in it last year and we're back again this year, but we're collaborating this time with Boy Crush, who's a really awesome band who approached us, and we are the movement to their sound.
Boy Crush,
they're epic. You should listen to them.
Yeah, well, actually, maybe we'll play a track from them.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah? They're really cool.
You think of one, and I'll try and track it down on my on my record player, and we can can spin it out, spin a tune.
Little taste.
Boy Crush. So they approached you. So the idea was they wanted to be part of the Fringe. Did they get their music out there?
I didn't know too much about them before we worked with them, but they're pretty big deal. They've been nominated for like a Vodafone something award.
Probably music.
Music award. Yeah.
Just a guess.
And like open for Kimber and stuff. Like they've done some really cool things, so we're pretty stoked to work with them. Yeah. It's been really interesting working with a different sector of the arts, so like dancers and musicians, the communication is interesting because we use different words and we have different ways of working, so it's been really cool.
I'd like to hear some more about that, actually.
Yeah,
how that collaboration and that relationship works, because things don't always work, especially with a boy crush.
Yeah.
Or even with a girl crush. Isn't that right?
That is true.
Lauren.
Yeah.
From Love Puke. Got a bit of a girl crush going on there.
Oh, always.
Character of Glenn.
Glenn was originally written as male, but I managed to convince Meg, the director, in my audition that I'd be a great female Glenn. And the person that Glenn ends up with is called Hermione, and we kept her as female. And just, kept the LGBTQ community there. And also, there is also a few other maybe closeted characters that you'll have to come watch the show to find out.
I read an amazing review in Theatre Views yesterday.
Yes, and they mentioned Rebecca, who plays Hermione, as a sultry Amy Winehouse goddess. Yeah. And I was like, cheers.
Yeah. A sultry Amy Winehouse goddess.
Yeah.
I don't think Amy Winehouse is kind of sultry, really.
I mean, I I guess maybe if you listen to her a little bit, but I never would consider her sultry, but I was like, Rebecca's definitely sultry at times in her poetry.
And Love Puke's such an interesting name because it seems to be like a oxymoron in a way.
And it really just captures kind of what the show is. It is about love and bodily functions, like sex, relationships, everything. It's messy. Things go wrong, things go right, and sex has a lot of bodily functions in it as well. So Rebecca's character, Hermione, writes a lot of her poetry on the toilet, and she is going to the toilet during some of the show. So, you know, not the actual actor, but through sound effects. But, yeah, it's, you know, the combination of something that we would consider gross to something like love. Yeah, and it's been, and Meg's just done it in such a good way that it reflects really well onto what then is happening with the main couples, because there's three main couples. Then there's myself, Glenn, who is the narrator a little bit, or the conscience, or the person who hates on them. And then there's Hermione, who writes the beautiful poetry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Lots of things to think about there.
Yeah.
And a bit scary, because I understand there is, it's quite challenging to watch.
There's a lot of confronting moments. Especially my character, like I talk directly to the audience. I will point people out and I ask them if they masturbate directly to them. I say masturbate. I get in trouble. It's masturbate.
Yeah.
But so I say masturbate in the show. But when I first started, I say masturbate.
It's very posh.
I was
very English.
Very, very posh. But then there are, you know, there's conversations about closet homosexuality and how someone just wants to stay hidden. They don't want to acknowledge their sexuality. There's impotency. There is if a woman sleeps around a lot, is she a slut? And is that a bad thing? Is a man who just stays with a woman because he's scared to be alone, is he the villain? You know, and then there is a lot of sex and arguments that are portrayed. And even though there's no nudity, there is a few raunchy moments. That's always a bit of fun. But, yeah, it's going to confront what we believe sex and love is.
Golly. And is it a long piece?
It's about a minute 20.
A minute 20.
Yeah. And if the audience laughs longer than we thought they would, it goes on for longer.
Okay.
There was one performance, it was a minute 30, and we were like, an hour 30, and it was like, oh, they're laughing a lot tonight, which is good for us.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of, like,
good.
Yeah.
So it's a comedy then? Maybe.
Yeah, I've tried to define it, and I'm like, it's a comedy. I thoroughly enjoy it, but my character's fun, whereas for some other characters, it's not fun.
Hard work.
Hard work, yeah.
There's always villains in every piece, though, isn't there? It's got to be. Well, yeah. And like, is the cast of your piece, how many are in the cast?
So it's just performed solo by one person, as most solo things are.
Yeah.
And, but there are nine characters.
Okay.
And all of them are lecturers who are based on lectures. Lecturers from the University of Auckland, from my time there, which was during the mid-90s and early 2000s.
What subjects are we allowed to learn?
I studied English literature, some linguistics, bit of German law, and I also did some music in a sort of extracurricular way. So they are all represented through these lecturers. And my practice back then, which I wouldn't call a practice until now, but I'm now thinking that that's what it was to, whenever the lecturers said something that was kind of a throwaway or an aside that didn't necessarily have much to do with the content of the lecture itself, I'd always write that down at the bottom of my piece of paper, my lined refill. And so after 7 years at uni, doing that through probably about 1,700 hours of lectures, I found that I had a hell of a lot of dialogue, or, you know, lots of monologue, you might say, and that it needed to be made into something. And I waited 20 years.
Wow.
And now I've made it into something, and that's what it is. It's this... this 50-minute piece performed by Meek Austin, who's a collaborator that I've worked with quite a few times and have known for about 25 years. And, yes, so she performs all of this dialogue that's been threaded into the 50-minute piece around these themes that kind of all came up once I started going through it all. Yeah, and they are actually things that some of them are very kind of off the cuff and quite humorous, which is probably why I was intrigued and kind of compelled to write them down in the first place. But some of them are actually around themes, things that have stuck with me from that time that I've just found myself attracted to, and things that I kind of care about and that are basically an axe that I want to grind. So.
Ooh.
You're so, such a better student than me. I didn't write anything down. Oh, yes, I did all my uni lectures.
I'd better be careful not to say anything out of turn tonight as I end up in a play in a couple of days.
Yeah.
I see you've got notes going. You're ready. Yes, yes. Briefing was crap. Yeah. Do you have any themes running through the stuff you're presenting in the... Is it like, is there an overall theme about it, or is it just like collaboration of different pieces?
So there are three styles that we're showing each weekend. It's mindful contemporary, and the second one's K-pop, and then the third one's aerial dance. But the main themes are diversity and how, yeah, it's not only just like, I feel like generic, I guess. Well, I don't know how to say it, generic, but what did you say, Carleen? It's like pockets of styles that aren't really shown as much in just community spaces, especially in community halls or things like K-pop. It's not that well known, even though it's becoming really popular in New Zealand. It's really, really big in Europe and America, but it's like Korean pop, and there's so many people that love the music and the dance moves that come with it, and yeah, even the style of contemporary dance, it's so broad, but yeah, just
showing who was that. Who was that artist who had that song that hit the number one charts here for ages?
Was it Gangnam Style?
Gangnam Style.
Yeah.
I remember I was listening to it and living in the States, I think it was around that time when I was heading over. But all my friends who listened to K-pop was like, why is he becoming famous?
Yeah.
There's so much better ones. But
he's one pocket in the pocket.
Yeah.
Of the genre. Yeah. In the pocket.
But he's been the lead-in for a lot of people, which has been good. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, that probably opened the door a lot to around the world to K-pop, I think. Whether you like him or hate him, he did do that. Any reason why you think that might have been, he might have been the person to trigger it off, do you think?
I think it's the comedy in that as well. If you see the music videos, it's just like you don't even need to know what they're talking about, but it's just the humor involved and all the little clips of everyday kind of Korean things that are funny as well. And it's like such a catchy dance move. Yeah. It's such a catchy little hook line. And so there's so many of that continuous dance movements that you can do to those,
because actually everyone picked up on the dance moves, didn't they? Started doing them.
Because
that's such a big part of K-pop is that the dance is something that's interwoven in with the music, so it's not something that's kind of added later that people just watch and don't participate in. It's a style where the dance moves, you know, in the same way that, I don't know, we can connect the single ladies dance to Beyonce. People know that the dances that go with the song. So
the
it's
single
that.
Ladies dance. See, I missed that one.
Oh, no, you know it.
Yeah, no. Beyonce's not really on my radar, on my playlist. But
okay, we can go back a bit further.
Yeah. The
no, it's not the time
the
so much.
The time warp. How about that?
That's I know that one.
You know, like the moves and the song.
Beyonce isn't a time thing. It's a choice thing. Yeah. Let's just put it that way.
But yeah, and I think that kind of speaks to the other theme that runs through all of these, which is actually just about participation. And that in all of these genres, maybe it's not like you don't see aerial dance in a public space very much just because of logistical reasons. But that was sort of your intention from the start, wasn't it, Cindy, just to have this idea that anyone can participate in dance, that it's not something that has to happen in a studio or that you have to have a particular background to take part in, which is also in a nice little connection here. How Cindy and I know each other originally was I was her lecturer at the University of Auckland in dance studies, particularly community dance, which is something that Cindy and I have gone on to work a lot in that realm together. just with those ideas that dance isn't something that belongs to a few people, but actually everybody can dance given the right context.
Wow.
The right context.
I've seen people at 2 a.m. trying to dance and turned out very successful.
Well, that might not be the genre we know.
And that's community spaces often.
Yeah.
So it's bringing dance to the community spaces, not necessarily for the choice of the people around them. Jez, how do you feel about dance in the community? Are you, what kind of genre of dance are you? Is it contemporary or is it ballet or is it?
Yeah, we are contemporary mainly. We dabble in a bit of like performance art, and we're very open to experience different types of moving. I think contemporary is probably, you can kind of get away with calling anything. Most things contemporary because it's pretty broad. So we go with contemporary. We trained just over the road there at UniTech in contemporary dance, so we're contemporary dancers. How I feel about it in the community is I think there's just so much room for more things to happen. And that's something that we noticed when we left the comfort of university studies was that all of a sudden we had no classes to go to, or they cost like $20. So we, as a company, have started our own classes called Mindful Movement Classes. And it was for, ideally, for people that had never had the opportunity to go to a dance class before. It can be quite a formidable kind of idea for people that maybe haven't experienced going to a dance, like a structured dance class before. And we had a residency at Toy 2 Studios on Ponsonby, which was awesome. And we held them there. We've done a few terms now, and it's been an incredible experience as for ourselves, because we have to learn how to teach dance because we were always the students. So that has been really rewarding and also really cool to see people dancing in the class with us. Yeah, and progressing and moving. And I think for me, one of the most interesting dances I've ever seen have been performed by non-dancers. I think it's really important to I think this Dancing in the Parks thing is such a great idea, and I hope that there is more funding and opportunities for people to engage with the community.
Well, it's something that you could sell to the regional events team at Auckland Council, isn't it? You could say, you've got movies, you've got music. How about putting on some dances in the parks in the evening? That'd be fantastic. Set up a stage or a flat area and just do performances for the community for free would be fantastic. And you get paid for it. Which is nice.
Because like, I used to do professional ballroom and Latin American dance, and it's so elite. And I didn't stay at it long when I was a teenager because I wasn't part of the squad. And so it'd be really cool to see free dance performances and realise it's not something you see in Strictly Ballroom or, something that you have to go to a competition for. It'd be really awesome to see that kind of any style of dance just being performed in parks.
Yeah, because quite a few times people would tell me, oh, I don't dance. I don't dance. Or like, oh, I don't really do that. But then it's like, well, what's your standard, or what's the standard? I can keep saying to myself too, like, I'm not really a good dancer and all of that, but it's like, what does that mean, that elite? You're talking about, it's like, it's not for the elite, it's for everyone.
Kind of what is dance, really?
Everything
can be
totally.
You can go to a show, someone like drinking a Milo for 2 hours, and that be a dance, anything.
I saw a dance. I got invited to a preview a show about 4 years ago from Kick Arts, and got some tickets and went along to a contemporary dance show, and they didn't move. They lay on the floor with no music and didn't move for about 15 minutes, and then they got up and moved and then sat and then didn't move. No music or anything. It was actually really confronting and challenging as an audience member, and I was determined to stay. God, I was determined to stay, because I thought it must be going somewhere. It didn't, but that's dance, though, isn't it? I mean, that's the beauty of it. Is it's theatre you know, you've got a script and you're working, unless you're devising, you're working within the confines of that script, mm-hmm. I suppose. Is that challenging? You wrote the script, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I thought that I wasn't going to have to write much of it because I thought I was basically, you know, patching together all these pre-written comments. Things. But as it turned out, I realised as I was going through that I needed to kind of create some content of my own that really was these ideas that had kind of hung around for all this time. And in fact, one of them was about this idea of, you know, who are creatives and why do they get called creatives and whose interest is it that there's a sort of category of people and that you use a noun to do that. And because my background is in kind of language, I, you know, I've always found it really interesting the way that that the world is broken down in terms of, you know, nouns and verbs primarily, and that, that you know, it's quite a powerful thing once you get a good handle on when it's happening, why it's happening, and there's often...
People doing shit.
People doing shit. Yeah. People doing some quite political shit in the way that they use their nouns and verbs. And I think in New Zealand I've noticed this sort of comparing, you know, creatives, people who do creative things with, say, Americans who do creative things, that they're often much more likely to kind of own the noun of being a dancer or being an actor or being a writer or whatever.
In America or here?
Sorry, over there.
Yes.
Than here. Yeah, so I worked briefly in a restaurant, a German restaurant in New York, before I got fired. He's like, I gotta let you go.
Why did they let you go?
Oh, there weren't many customers, and of course, you know, you only get paid on tips over there. Mm. And I was a terrible waitress. That was probably key. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's a waitress or a waiter, but they all say they're an actor or a dancer or what. You know, they don't say I'm a waiter. Mm-hmm. They say I'm a dancer because that's what they sort of own, that's what they want to be and that's what they feel they are.
And New Zealanders often say, I'm just a, fill in the occupation.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've heard people say, oh, I'm just a teacher. What?
Yeah.
No, I'm just a nurse or I'm just a pilot. You know, just like, well, that's quite a big thing to do.
To own your
I'm just an actor or I'm just doing this show at the basement or
that's a bit different. Like if you say I'm just doing a show at the basement, you're actually talking about, you know, the action.
That's true.
You know, and when people say to you, oh, what do you do? And there happens to be a sort of section in my play about this where the various characters are asking the audience primarily what do they do, but people always answer that question with say I'm a blah, which is different to say oh I do this and I do that and you know I walk my dog and I raise my children and I dance and I sing and you know what do you do well
because you could say I'm a waiter but I do waiting. That's bad grammar, isn't it? I work as a waiter, but actually my career is in the arts. That's kind of how you could own that better.
Yeah, really, there's just...
So many different ways
I think you just kind of can end up in a box unnecessarily if you just have to be a blah. You know?
So what do you do?
So I work in the arts and I produce things and I raise my children and I do a bit of writing and... All sorts, really. That's one of the reasons why the question interests me so much.
Is it a full-time job for you in the arts?
No.
In the sense of writing and...
No. I really do freelance contract work, all sorts. I've worked in festivals and, I've worked at Auckland Live and I've worked at all sorts of different places, but... mainly I'm just working as a freelance. I'm just
a freelance. Yeah, there we go.
With really bad tech at home, you know. No one to ring up.
I had a modem issue today. I feel you. I really do. So you still lecture at the university?
Yes, I do.
And got any cool stories that Amy can take away?
Yes, please. There might be 2.0 coming up.
Well, yeah.
Is it interesting being on the other side, lecturing? Seeing people, how they interact or don't interact or engage or don't engage?
It's really interesting. Yeah. So I lecture in the same department that I studied in. So, you know, once upon a time I was the student in the paper that I teach, which is great because it means that I have you know, I can see the other side of the looking glass, mm-hmm. Which, yeah, I like to think helps me to not just stand up and speak at people, but to see it as a place of, like, a, you know, two-way knowledge sharing, that I have things that I can share with students and I can facilitate learning to happen, that it's not just a I speak at them, they learn, they get a grade, they go home. But also because I lecture in dance studies, it's quite a different world than, you know, a lecture theatre where there's 200 students sitting there with pen and paper waiting to, you know, dissect every word that you say.
Are there students who are there who aren't interested in dance, do you think? Would you?
Most of the students in my papers would be dance majors, but there are people who take dance as a minor, so who might come from arts or science or education, and take those papers, but obviously with an interest in dance.
Is there practical involvement in those papers? Are there practical papers, like the jazz school and the...
Yeah, so the degree as a whole is a combination of practical and theory-based work. And for instance, the paper that I was talking about earlier, community dance, is sort of unpacking some of these ideas that we're talking about tonight, participation and access and, you know, who dance belongs to. But in that paper, we take students out to high school and to Starship Hospital and to a retirement village, and do, you know, the learning that can really only happen when you're there doing the dancing.
Mm. How many of us have performed in a retirement village before?
I mean, when I was little, does it count?
Yeah.
In front of my grandparents and their friends. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I think it's great. In fact, I went to something at the dance faculty last year, which was about the poi, the person who's researching poi.
Kate, yeah.
Yes, and how she's going into all those aged care facilities. She's, well, you probably know better than I do, Colleen.
So Kate, so I am also doing my PhD at Auckland Uni, and Kate has...
We'll have to call you doctor soon.
Yeah, but not yet.
Dr. Carleen.
So she has also been doing her PhD. She's just finished, and my PhD was looking at dance and dementia, and her PhD was looking at poi and ageing. So we had very similar kind of ideas that we were unpacking, both to do with this idea that arts has something really strong and unique to offer in terms of health and aging. And
who saw Hip Operation?
Yeah,
the documentary about the group of Sexdarians. Is that the right word?
Octogenarians?
Sounds a bit more like something from Love Pit. Yeah. Sexterians. People over 60 who entered the World Hip Hop Championships.
And
it was so... It was a beautiful piece of filmmaking. And some of them were in their 80s, I think. And some of them didn't go off to do it, but it was a fascinating watch. And it showed that, in fact, we had somebody, for the director, on Kick Arts talking about that, and that whole conversation about how dance can be quite a healing thing and keep people moving when they're elderly, you know, just simple dance moves. And you can see that a lot of other cultures will do movement and dance, like Tai Chi and those sorts of things, and walking and that, whereas Western, I'm being generalising hugely here, but Western-centric societies tend to be quite sedentary as you get older. Getting into can you do dance classes in rest times? Do you think some of that mindful dance classes?
Why not? You can do them anywhere. I guess there would be an element of, I think, in that situation, you might have to think a bit of like health and safety. Like there might be some kind of you might need to have a bit more knowledge about the body and what you can, people can and can't do, but.
Do you learn that as a dancer? Is physiology part of dance training?
Oh, man. Well, just speaking from my experience at UniTech, I just felt like there's not enough room to learn everything, and that you have to take a bit of responsibility as somebody who's just interested in dance and use your own curiosity to source that information sometimes, because just... Pardon.
we have to learn how to dance, and not, like 90% of our degree was physical, and then we had to jam pack lectures in there to make it a degree, that we could get like a piece of paper at the end of the day. And there was just too much. There's so much to learn. I'd love to learn more about the body. And a lot of us, we had something called somatic practice, Michael Parmenter, when third year, but that wasn't introduced till last year. And ideally, you'd want to learn more. But yeah, I think just go and learn more yourself. Yeah, just be curious and seek information. Yeah.
Could cross over to being a personal trainer or something, learn all the things about
yeah, a lot of us actually and, yeah. work at a gym now for our like money jobs where we get like paid.
Your money jobs as opposed to the non-money jobs, as like i.e. dancing.
Yeah, the sometimes money jobs. Yeah. Yeah. So that naturally you have an interest in the body. So like some of us are someone from my class is a physiotherapist. Mm. Yeah, I work at Les Mills, and so does someone else. And
what do you do at Les Mills?
I instruct classes, and I also work at reception. Yeah, and a lot of us are Pilates instructors and yoga instructors. So, yeah, you have an interest in the body, and you find work. We try to find work that aids that interest. Mm. So, you don't want to cry every day working at something that you hate or not interested in.
Not every day.
Not every day, yeah.
Just sometimes.
Just sometimes. And you feel, yeah.
It's hard in the arts, though, isn't it, to survive?
I mean, really is.
You know, as an actor, do you find that?
I think I've had one or two paid jobs, and most of the time I'm doing community theatre just because there's not that many opportunities around at times. And then when there is, everyone's gunning for it. So I've worked as a travel agent, which was 2.5 years of regret, and now I work in broadcast and media, which is more relevant to what I want to do. But I mean, I'd love to have full-time acting work, but most of the time it's you do a gig and then you have to then go make money, whereas I know some people who can act full-time, but it's like 1 in 1,000 people do that. Other times it's either you're a waitress or a coffee barista, or you just work a full-time job and just hope that your boss gives you leave when you need to. But yeah, no, it's a tough market out there. It's competitive, and which makes it good in the sense of you got to keep upskilling, but it's also hard.
Did you study?
I was down at Victoria Uni, and I did my BA in theatre, film and English, and I did because I got rejection from Toy. And so I actually did on stage, but I also did backstage. So I'm also a light and sound designer as well.
Oh, wow.
I do that off cuff as well. But I really got into it. Victoria was a great little thing, but I was maybe sometimes in my English classes that student that does zone out if it wasn't something I was interested in. But after Victoria, I went off and worked at Disney World.
Oh.
So I actually interned at Disney and worked in entertainment there, which was an eye-opener.
Were you Minnie Mouse?
No, I am too tall to be Minnie Mouse, and I am too short to be Pluto. So I actually worked with the characters and was their storyteller.
Okay.
So I was the one talking for them, because they're not allowed to talk, because no one can do the voice.
Did you have to speak in an American accent?
I tried not to, but they couldn't understand me, so I had to. So one of our opening was, hey, y'all, can you all please get into your lines and get your autograph books open and get your cameras out? And it was just certain words. You had to put a y'all in, and they'll be like, oh, we are.
When in doubt, add a y'all.
Yeah, when in doubt, add a y'all. And because it was Florida, so it was the South, so that was very interesting. But like you were saying before, a lot of them were like, who worked as the princesses, say, they're like, I'm a dancer. And this is what I do, and I'm only being Cinderella until Disney hires me as a dancer. And I was kind of like, I've seen you dance, you're not that good. That was me being judgmental, though. Yeah.
But Cinderella, I mean, you don't want to be Cinderella, you want to be a dancer, because do they have big shows and stuff?
Yeah, so there's parades, there's stage shows. So I auditioned for a few stage shows, and I got through to a final round on one of them, and then they went, your visa doesn't allow us to put you on stage. And it was because I've come from more of like an improv panto comedy acting side, and so I was really gunning for it, and they're like, oh, actually, because of your visa and because the way Disney signed you up, you can't go on stage for us.
That's a shame.
I know. And there was one time, I know I looked like the character of Belle But by that time, I'd been there long enough to go, I'm okay. Like, I see what those princesses go through, and I would prefer to be the person to tell them the guests off rather than, you know, dealing with them.
Yeah.
But a lot of those young kids come in America, they have a bit more, I think, dream big, and that's where you'll go kind of thing. Whereas in New Zealand, we go, you can have those dreams, but make sure you have that job that pays the bills. Yeah.
The real job. You got a real job, Cindy?
I work at a cafe.
It's a real job?
Yeah,
it's a real job. Would you consider that to be how do you rate that answer?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Well, I rate it very highly.
Yeah. I work at a cafe.
I'll give you an A+.
Yeah, I'm usually at the back as well, just making food. So it's like chef / product maker / waitress.
Do you enjoy it?
There's days where it's like, I don't want to do this anymore. And then there's days where it's like, this is okay. But, you know, do I enjoy it? I don't know. Mm. Like, I love the people there. Like, it's definitely the people that make the job.
Yeah.
But then there's some days where it's just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
But you have to do something, don't you, to get yourself through to do the stuff that you love, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd love to get more involved with, like, the council somehow, or just things with the community, be a community engagement someone, facilitator of some sort. But
Community engagement officer.
Yeah.
Sounds like a really good title.
Yeah. But then listening. It's like, what are they really doing?
Wait, and that would be CEO.
Oh. CEO of Auckland Council.
You don't want that job. Just don't want that job.
Yeah. Maybe change a few words.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So when he answers the, what do you do for a living? He goes, nothing.
Yeah. Well, actually, I used to say, and this was a complete lie, when I was younger and studying and dancing quite a lot, and I would go like to a party or go out. When people asked me what I did, I used to say I was a hairdresser. Because I just kind of got really bored of the same conversation that would unfold every single time.
Yeah.
And it was just boring. Like, I don't want to have this conversation anymore. Yeah. Oh, you're a dancer. Oh, what kind of dancing do you do?
Mm.
Oh,
do you think it's because your life suddenly becomes more interesting than theirs, perhaps? Is that a judgment?
I think it was because people didn't really know enough to ask interesting questions.
Yeah. Mm.
So the questions became really surface level, which is what made them so boring. In the same way that I'm sure there's other jobs that would have the same sort of thing, where, you know, as soon as you say the job title, there's these kind of really surface level assumptions that come with it.
Yeah.
And the lame questions that you get.
I'm a comedian. Oh, make me laugh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, can you dance for me right here?
Yeah.
I know.
I'm a musician. Oh, we've got a gig coming up this weekend, a friend's party. Would you play for us?
Yeah, for
$400.
Yeah.
Oh, I was hoping you could do it as a freebie. We'll feed you.
Or you'll get publicity from this. We'll make sure we put in a good recommendation.
For your next paid gig.
Yeah.
Because we can't afford. Do you get asked to do things for free as a dancer?
Yeah, of course. It's kind of this... that's something that we've definitely had conversations about. When you leave uni, just because you're starting from the bottom, so we were told and we wanted to say yes to absolutely everything because we want people to notice us, we want to do the things, we want to do everything. So we've been training and this is our time to go and do stuff, so money isn't even like on the mind. Mm. And then after maybe 6 months or a year, we need money, but we want to sustain the working in the arts, and you have to come to a point where you decide that you're going to... I still remember turning down work because it was unpaid for the first time. It was like the weirdest thing, but at some point you just have to decide when that's going to be a priority and when you've been working for free for long enough, and it's different for everyone. Some people don't mind doing it for their whole lives, and that's awesome. And like the work that we're doing at the moment with Boy Crush isn't paid, but we wanted to do it because it's awesome. And sometimes you don't get paid in money, but the payoff is in exposure and Fringe Festival. We could get an award, which could help us with funding, and also the relationship that we now have with Boy Crush. And we've also like they just gave us a whole new audience that we couldn't reach by ourselves. So we didn't, you got to choose your projects, not just by if you're getting paid or not. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of other factors that can be just as rewarding in the long term.
Career pathway.
But yeah, you just got to protect yourself as well. Like, it's fine. It's okay to say no to things. Like, you're a human being that's trying to live and you need money, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. it's true. Yeah. Unfortunately, we need money.
I think there's a responsibility also on the side of people giving out work, is that pay the people if you can. We are a very small company and we have no money, but we have always paid people, like the lighting guys and the people on the door, and we've always, even it might not be much, but we just think it's so important that we support each other.
I had an interesting conversation with a people from a theatre company the other day who said, the actors said, we're always the last ones to get paid. Mm. They pay the designer and they pay the lighting technician and they pay the, you know, technical manager, and but then we get what's left at the end of it. Why is that, do you think? Why the performer who's out the front? Any theories on that one?
It's interesting because so the company I'm doing Love Puke with, Pirangi Creative, I was actually a producer on The Iliad, which was their first show, which we sold out our season for, and I have had this conversation because it's profit share, and same with Love Puke, we're doing a profit share at the end, and it was kind of like we didn't even get a chance to think about pay. It was kind of like you're paid everyone at the same time, so we tried to do even mix between backstage and on stage, but then we had to think we had to hire costumes, so that cost and that cost. So it's kind of, it's strange because as an actor you're kind of like we're here the whole time, whereas a tech person can come in a little bit later. But I think sometimes as producer you do get set in that, oh, this person, like the actors we audition and they've joined our group kind of thing, whereas tech people, oh, you know, they're bit professional, so we should give them a bit more money. Or even then it's like, I mean, luckily with Iliad we were like, and I think the same with Love Puke, it's all everyone, we get the money in and we split the money evenly, everyone gets paid on the same day, which is quite nice. But yeah, I feel like sometimes people see actors as it's you're giving them the stage, so therefore they're still getting exposed. Yeah, and it's because I do a lot of community theatre, which, you know, is a choice, because I feel like as the same with dancing, you need to get exposed, and sometimes the only way you're going to get through that is through community theatre or doing things for profit, which may not get profit, it's just getting your name out there. But it's also like, you think about it, it's like that's all, and the actors are there from, I think I was for Puke from about October to now. And it's
rehearsing in the evening after work,
And also in between I did the Shoreside Community Shakespeare in the Park, so I was doing show one night, rehearsal one night, show one night, rehearsal one night.
Do you have many friends?
That's a good, I mean, yes, they're all in my shows. So after this season maybe not, but if they do have friends, I'm like, hey, do you want to pay money to come see my show?
Yeah.
Or if you usher, you get in for free.
Yeah.
But I've been going straight for a year and a half, community and paid work, and just it haven't stopped. Because I feel like if you do stop, sometimes you do get a bit panicked about, you know, oh, then I die off and then go back to my paid working job, which really it's not bad, but yeah.
What do you say to dancers who are going, or is there any conversation you have with them about the realities of the profession in New Zealand, or about going overseas? Those conversations happen?
There are about 1,000 conversations just in those words said.
Yeah.
So we have a paper called Professional Practices, which students do in their third year, which is all about that transition and where the industry's at and how to negotiate some of these tricky things. And my kind of most simplistic advice that I give students is to always make sure they know why they're doing something. Because if you know why you're doing it, it makes it so much easier. If you're working in a cafe and you're working in the cafe to be able to pay your rent so you can take classes that week that you really want to, it just makes everything less of this kind of whirlwind of, oh gosh, I'm doing things that I don't know if they're my career or not. You can sort of manage it, I guess, manage all the different hats that you might wear and know what the hat is, and in the same way that you might do a project for the love of that project, even if the money's not amazing, or because of the connections that you make. But it's, yeah, the process is easier if you're making decisions about that and not just riding the wave of, I just will say yes to things and hopefully end up with some magical combination of things. And the other advice I say is, if you do enough of what you love, then either a job will arrive in the world that fits what you do, or you will become the job in the world. Because, you know, in creative industries especially, a lot of the time it's, yeah, someone just sticking to their guns on something. For instance, my background was in dance and psychology, and for years people were just like, that's such a strange combination. What is that? Like, what does that look like in the world? And then I was a circus performer on the side, and that was all very strange. And now things like this arrive in my life, which are all of those things, like all of those paths have led to this moment, even though 10 years ago they might have seemed very separated from each other and almost conflicting with each other. But at some point it's like the roads meet and you go, ah, all that time that I spent doing that and that time that I spent doing that, they've come together.
Yeah, definitely. Like, just to add to that too, like all of these, like the contemporary one, the K-pop one, the aerial dance, they're all the people that I've just met and connected with, like the people that are running the workshops, and even Carlene for aerial dance as well. Just like, you meet people and it's like collaborating, and is so important, of just like being like, oh, like you're doing that thing, like, well, I'm doing this thing, like we should totally
collaboration's big in the arts, isn't it? You've got to be working. It's not something that you can do in isolation unless you're writing something, I suppose. Do you write in isolation? Did you?
Well, this is kind of my, it's like my first, I say, proper play, in that it's full length. I did do a 10-minute one-to-one piece last year, which was at the basement for its one-to-one fringe season, and that was a sort of interactive piece on endurance parenting, which was quite intense.
Endurance parenting.
Yeah, that's what I coined it, because it was kind of along the lines of like those like bleep tests that people do in personal training and whatever, where it's just getting more and more hardcore. And so I had like a voiceover going in the background with these beeps and these instructions for what the person in the audience, well, the audience, of course, who was actually as active, had to do, and we had an actor playing a toddler. They had to, like, feed the toddler and then take the toddler for a walk, and, you know, it was just getting more and more hardcore. And there was yogurt flying everywhere. And
were there warnings on the tickets for the show?
We did put a little bit of a disclaimer, and we made them, we sort of made them wear this front pack with a sack of potatoes inside it as well, so that they could feel weighed down sort of physically at the same time as getting emotionally, you know, more harangued. Yeah, so I think endurance parenting was quite a sort of fair name for it. But yeah, I really like peace and quiet. I've just discovered that about myself, and it's not just because I've got two young boys. I think I'm just quite sensitive to sound, and so I've realised that I quite like being in my own space, and just in order to focus on something, it just can't be noisy. So I do struggle in a kind of, you know, office environment where it's open plan, you've got to listen to everyone's conversations, and I mean, it's stimulating in lots of ways, but it's also like, oh my God, how's anyone get any work done?
Yeah, it's like the trend to go to ILEs, innovative learning environments, in schools, without tearing down walls again, and all the kids are in one area together, and three teachers. And I heard in practice it works really well. The pedagogy fits really well with the space, but there must be some kids who just go, I just want to be in somewhere quiet.
Yeah.
But apparently there's quiet spaces as well, I suppose. And now open learning, you know, there's places like Vodafone and that, they have those offices where just no one has a desk. They just have places you stand and sit and plug in and do whatever you want. So that's why you can never find anyone when you ring them. But little dig. modem problem. The world's changing in that way, isn't it? People are now more collaborative in the workplace and in school. And if you are a quiet, reclusive person, it'd be hard to function.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really reclusive, but it's just sort of that. Somebody gave me a definition the other day of an introvert, which is apparently not someone who is kind of like socially inept, but is actually someone who kind of has to regenerate on their own and gets their energy on their own rather than...
out from other people.
Yeah. I mean, this is a bit of a tangent, but the whole thing about like the lecture and how you give your lecture and who you give it to and in what way and, you know, I've been kind of reflecting about that now because, of course, so much stuff is online, and I realised that all of these notes that I took down in a physical environment from people being, in my mind, at their most human when they say these kind of asides and these funny things, you couldn't get that if you were just in a sort of chat room with your lecturer, because they wouldn't say any of those things if they were just typing them, or if, you know, if it was just a video that you had to watch at a certain time of the day. So, yeah, I've been thinking quite a bit about, you know, what's it like these days to even be in a lecture? Do they exist in the same way, and what are the pros and cons, I guess, of it?
Is the lecturing style changed in the dance department as technology's come through from the time when you were a student in, say, the last 10 years?
I would say not much at all has changed, really, because we are in a room with humans connecting, you know.
That's so important.
You can't
humans are good, right?
Not do that with dancing. You know, we're bodies and we're brains, and there's relationships that happen between people, you know, and all of that is part of dancing or thinking about dancing or talking about dancing. So I would say probably actually that department is like less influenced by technological changes because, yeah, it's kind of just doing the dancing in the room with the humans or talking about the dancing. We don't have tables or chairs. We have dance studios where we sit on the floor or get up and move or figure something out with, you know, by thinking and talking and moving rather than taking notes. But because, Cindy, did you do lectures in other topics through your degree?
Yeah, for like the general education papers.
Yeah.
There was just like, I did learning sexualities, and that was really, really interesting. But you're just sitting there, and there's like heated discussions happening, and it's just more like intense because it's a larger space and there's more people, and like people are getting really, they're valid topics and everything. And so, but it's really different to our kind of degree where we sit in a circle and we talk about our feelings and discuss them and really like go in depth and things. But these are people like, no, I believe in this, and then another person like springs up about, so it's quite different.
I guess you can't really have, like, how many people would have been in that class?
Like,
100?
Yeah, probably.
You know, it's like you can't listen to 100 people's opinions or feelings or thoughts on anything.
God forbid.
But you can listen to 25 people, you know, like create that space, which I guess is the difference, is there's logistics of, just imagine that lecture where 100 people got to say what they wanted.
Yeah.
And it's also not really like a safe space. It doesn't feel like a safe space.
Also physically, like, just sitting down for an hour and a half is hard to, like, the brain, you're not meant to be able to focus.
Oh, yeah, I definitely had cat videos on when I was in it was, like, 300 plus people, and I was at the back with cat videos. Yeah. I'd pay attention at times, but if it got
cat
to the
videos.
Yeah, there's, like, kidding cameras and everything, and they were amazing when you're sitting there and the lecturer just droning on and on. It's not that everyone's talking, it's just that some lecturers are just there to tell you their point and not a discussion, and so you sit there and sometimes you just watch cat videos.
You should all study properly. Don't listen to me.
Let's listen to Boy Crush. What now? Can you pick a song? Do you know? Is there, you got a favourite?
No, I can never do that. Okay. Just pick a. All of them are great. You could go with Desperate Late Night Energy, I guess, is the. Or any of them. Literally, just pick one.
Desperate Late Night Energy. I haven't found. I'm gonna have to keep looking. So
you could go for Face Mouth.
Oh, look at that remixes.
Oh, there we go.
That's the remixes. Is that what we're looking for?
I don't think it matters.
Okay,
remix
so
would be cool.
Yeah. So why don't we hit up one of these remixes? When we come back, I want to find out how you, what your pathway was to where you got to, like at school. What were you like at school? I was interested to know that. Were you that kid who was going to be in the arts, or were you that kid who just sat in the corner really quietly? And then also, I want to know about your shows, because we one thing I haven't heard is the theme, apart from Love Puke, is, you know, the themes of your shows, and the lecturing. We've got that, but I'm interested to know if you've got a thematic outcome there. And then we're going to do some shameless marketing, because everyone loves that, so you get to know where you can buy tickets to see these amazing shows. It all sounds, some of them are free by the sounds of it, but you need to know where they're on so you don't miss out, or where you can track them down. So we're going to listen to Primitive Squat. That's not right.
Okay.
Is that the song?
Go with Primitive Squat. It's a great song.
And this is the Giganta remix.
Cool.
So enjoy that. When we come back, we will chat some more, and you can find out how you can see some of these amazing pieces of art work that are happening in Tamaki Makaurau in the next couple of weeks. Yes, and the technology hates me, and we all know that. So I'm just going to try that again. And we will... now I know why that's happening. Okay. My wife has my Spotify on at her house, at our house. People, if you're sharing a Spotify account, it's really interesting, because I've just discovered this last week, that actually if you start to play someone and someone else is playing it on there, you can't actually access it. And that's the second time that's happened. So, Primitive Squat, we're going to play that. I'm just going to go back to the beginning. Sorry for the technical hitch there, people, but here we go. I'm not a psycho. creative. Didn't expect that to come out. That didn't come out of my mouth. Was that, that was quite different from what
that
you
That was very different. Yeah. I've heard the remix before.
Yeah.
It was, it's a lot more, I would explain the music that we're using, the version is a bit more like poppy, electronic, not as mellow as that. But that was very appropriate for this time in the evening.
Yeah.
But yeah, the show is going to be a bit more like dance party-ish.
Dance party-ish.
Yeah, a bit more like quirky and awesome. Poppy. Yeah.
Like this.
Oh yeah, here we go. It's a bit more like
this is Boy Crush. This is at normal speed.
100%. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's bringing back some
moves.
Yeah, yeah. Some
yeah. Could you get stress. Back in health and safety? Can you hop back in your seat, please? Yeah. We don't want to see you dance, Richard.
Yeah, that's Boy Crush. Then.
That's Boy Crush. The... There. Well, you can check them out on Spotify. Just obviously put in Boy Crush, and up they will come. So school, interested to know what you're all like at school as far as a career, because you've chosen a career in the creative sector. Is that the creative? We're creatives. I'm a creative.
I'm a creative.
I'm a creative what?
I create.
I create. Yeah. We'll start with you, Amy. So school.
School, yeah.
Did you want to be involved in the sector or did you have a creative vision?
I did not realise that there was a sector. I didn't even know the word sector until I worked for a while at Creative New Zealand, and then it was sector this and sector that. But no, I actually started off as a lawyer, and then I taught English as a foreign language, and then I worked for a legal publisher. And then I found out that there were actually jobs in the arts, and I got one of them, and I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool.
So at school... Lawyer? You always want to be a lawyer?
No, I didn't. I just wanted to go to university and take notes. No, I did like English, German, French, maths, and music, and yeah, that was kind of. I didn't really think that much about actually working. I wasn't sort of future focused in that way. I was just. Enjoying learning, I think, yeah. I went to Selwyn College, which was a brilliant school for the arts, music, drama, visual arts, and so there was a lot of cool stuff happening there, and it wasn't out of the question at all to, you know, to think that these people go on and do, you know, do cool things in the arts. But I didn't personally have a plan in that way, yeah, it just sort of... happened once I realised that I really didn't want to be a lawyer.
What kind of law?
I worked briefly in litigation in a kind of corporate setting. It just wasn't my bag.
Doesn't sound that interesting, although it's represented to be quite sexy on television.
Yeah, which is why so many people go to law school. Mm. Yeah, yeah, and then they find out.
Yeah. It's not all Denny Crane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Do you enjoy watching legal dramas?
I do. I love them. I love legal dramas. I love political dramas. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm trying not to watch too much TV at the moment because I find you don't get that much done when you watch too much TV.
Really?
It's this new idea.
Yeah. There has been billions of dollars of research done. You know, there's always every year I think there's a new study that comes out showing how watching too much TV makes you unproductive. And I'm wondering, as from an academic point of view, how people get funding through, you know, to do their PhDs and TV draining you from your energy and your work productiveness.
Yeah.
Because it's already been proven several times.
Maybe that's the trick, is that it's a, like, you know the answer that you're going to get. So your hypothesis will always be correct.
Yeah.
That's good research, right?
Yeah, right there. Yeah, yeah. And so do you have to do research as part of your job? Has Auckland University encouraged lecturers to do research and stuff?
Well, because I'm doing my PhD, there's a lot of research. But yeah, I think in terms of the university as a whole, there is definitely this idea that teaching and research happen alongside each other, because knowledge is not something that, you know, is set in stone at any one point in time. And so that's the way that we learn new things in the world is by people discovering those things and then it getting integrated into the teaching.
So when you were at school, did you think you'd ever become a doctor of dance?
No, I didn't even get to do dance at school. Our high school didn't offer any dance classes at all. In the same way, kind of just never thought of that as being a possibility at all.
So how did you get involved with dance?
Well, I always danced outside of school, but in my mind that was outside of school. That was a hobby, something for fun. And I really liked school. I liked learning and liked thinking and figuring things out. It was really when I started university and I did my psychology degree first, and there was the option to do dance as a minor, and I thought it was just going to kind of be something like watching cat videos to get me through the boring lectures. When I started doing that and realised that dance was something that you could actually research or think about in a way that's not just about the movement, but there's all sorts of layers to it and all sorts of thinking that happens, then I just along the way kind of picked up more and more. And then I ran away to teach circus for a year and broke my arm and had a great epiphany about maybe not ever being able to dance again, and came back and added on a dance degree and then just built.
Added on, just.
Yeah, just on the side. and then those things just built from there. And, along the way, as you are surrounded by more and more people who are living that sector or that lifestyle, you realise that there's a whole lot more going on out there than what your careers advisor told you at high school.
And here you are now teaching young people.
Yeah.
You enjoy that?
Yeah, I love it. I love teaching at that tertiary age, and then like the group who are performing in the park are teenagers, and that's another whole kind of wonderful world of being able to offer different possibilities than what we know they're getting told by their school teachers or even what their parents think is possible in the world.
Your parents been supportive of your career choices?
Yeah, they have. They, when we were younger, let us do a whole lot of different activities and try things out and drop things if we really didn't like them. And yeah, there was always this kind of idea, I guess, that as long as we were committing to things and putting in the right amount of effort, then they were worth doing if we were getting something back from them.
You certainly have to commit if you want a career in the arts.
Yeah, and definitely if you want a career as a circus performer.
Yeah.
Or be committed, maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure which one, actually. And so your choice to...
So I went to the biggest all-girls school in the country, which is Westlake Girls on the North Shore, and I'm born and bred on the North Shore. I was always the talky student, but I was never disrespectful, which was always good, never really got in trouble. But I started doing dance from a very young age, so I thought I would be a dancer, and then where that Latin American and Ballroom came through, and then got into drama at about the age of 10, and then did that. And then and when I hit year 13, when I was just about to turn 18, we were the first Westlake Girls class to have a year 13 drama class, because I went, I'm going to get a scholarship. I didn't, but I got a class. And Westlake Girls and Boys Drama have actually blown up since then and are putting on huge performances, which I never got to do. But, just from that year level of us pushing, and then didn't really have the parent support. They were like, you can do it, but have a proper job as well. And then I went down to Victoria, did a BA, Disney got me, travelling got me, and then I'm like, actually, I came back to it, but I was always a talkie. But it's funny, we were talking about introverts, being introvert, extrovert before, and I'm actually an introvert, so I need to go away from people to build my energy back up. But people go, oh, you're an extrovert because you're so talky.
There's a term I heard recently, is ambiverted.
Ambiverted, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Which means that, and a lot of people who work in this sector,
yeah,
are ambiverted.
Yeah, yes. We just need to take a moment, breathe, and then, growing up on the shore and at Westlake, I was surrounded by diversity, so it's actually been quite nice with Love Puke, because I've done I've been in casts which haven't been that diverse, but Love Puke's actually one of the most diverse casts I've ever seen, and it's been really wonderful to see something that I see reflected in my like high school life or just day-to-day life living in Auckland to actually be reflected on stage, which it's been really, really cool. Yeah. But I was definitely talky.
Jazz. School.
I was the opposite. I was mute. I was so shy.
Yeah.
The shyest little thing ever. Yeah, so never would have thought I would be brave enough to, yeah, I've like danced topless, I've like done weird stuff on stage. Never, ever dreamed so what, I would have the
what led
bravery.
You down that path?
I don't know. I love dancing. My mother is quite creative. She was a music teacher. She really fostered any kind of interest I had. She was the one who took me to my first dance show, Black Grace, when I was young. And I just, yeah, I was lucky. I had NCA level, like, dance was introduced when I was in form.
Oh, I remember, yeah.
10, I think.
Yeah, I remember when it was introduced. Yeah. It was combo with drama, dance, yeah. And then they split up, I think, at NCA level 2.
Yeah.
And I couldn't take both because they clashed, so I took drama instead.
And that's how, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
that's cool.
Yeah, it was lucky that I wasn't one of those dancers that was in ballet since I was 5 years old or whatever. I didn't dance until I was about, yeah, 14 or 15, which is quite late, I think, for some people, or people think that's late to dance. And I just had a really inspirational dance teacher called Tia. I think she lectures at Auckland Uni now. But she taught at Massey High School. And I don't know, I just felt like it was the most interesting thing happening in my life at that moment. And at school anyway, I was probably like quite a kinesthetic learner. Like I like to move my body. I don't like sitting still for ages.
Yeah,
and
sorry.
I'm tired, it's good. And it suited, yeah, I just... Man, I just love spending time working the weirdest things I can do with my body.
And you also said you've done, like you mentioned, you do dance topless. That's something that you wouldn't do as a shy student. So what gives you the confidence and dance to
oh, it's such
just doing that?
Gradual happening. Yeah, we've talked a lot about, I was a completely different person when I went into the 3-year degree for performing arts than when I came out, and I can stop dancing or whatever, and whatever that degree will have given me is confidence, yeah, because you just have to, because you're on stage and it's fight or flight, you just learn, and you also are in an environment of really supportive, knowledgeable people. Like, my class was small and we just loved each other and cared for each other, and you were in an environment that enabled you to grow, and then you just got more confident. And then when I left, I was ready. Like, my collective dance plant, we had a show called Meet last year in August, and there was nudity in that show and like some really confronting scenes that like my parents didn't want to watch, kind of thing. So
did they?
They did, of course. Yeah, yeah. Have to. yeah, and
they just watch with their hands over their eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, we were ready. We had spent 3 years building up and watching other people that we really inspired us do it, and like it's really important to have like not do that kind of stuff for no reason, or like there's a big conversation about why you would do something like that, and supporting people and creating an environment that's like consent, and like that's a massive massive discussion that needs to be had, and yeah, but it was right for that work. And yeah, luckily I didn't have to do it, but one day maybe have to, yeah.
Great career start. Cindy.
Hi.
What were you at school? Was it focused on dance and stuff? Did you do dance as part of the NCA?
Yeah, so I actually grew up on the shore as well. Went to a massive high school called
Rangitoto College. And yeah, so I don't think bigger is better, because bigger means just way too many people, and you're just a number, really, and you're just a pool of fish there. And yeah, and I also had a creative mum, so she's like a visual arts, like she studied what is it called, design, and yeah, she's an artist, so it's awesome. But yeah, it was an interesting time. I probably wasn't the best student. I wagged a lot. I wasn't at school for most of the time, and I only went for dance, I think, for most times. Yeah, and I only did well in dance because I probably showed up only for that. And yeah, it was it's because like they don't expect, like, I don't know, being very stereotypical, but I had glasses and I had really long hair, and I was just like quite like shy, and I could slip in and out of class, and so I just walk around the field and go home, take the bus and go home, and so no one caught me ever wagging, because the school's so big, it's like to get caught is probably harder.
If you're that quiet child, then yeah, you're not gonna notice.
Yeah, and you just bring in a slip after, but don't you know. You're just like, you get so good at like doing your mum's signature, you could just like do it. But
Cindy,
yeah,
now has a web page called How to Wag School.
Yeah, I never really was the person to like draw attention, so they'd just be like, oh yeah, she's
so why did you decide to study at university in dance?
I think that's the only subject that I was really passionate about, for some reason, I don't know why, like that's just what kept me going. And I wanted to do something with the community and help other people through dance, but I didn't know how to do that, and Auckland Uni really opened up the doors through community dance, and I was like, whoa, there's such a thing that you can involve other people and yeah, create awesome things at that without all the show aspects of dance and theatre, and yeah, but also really enjoy doing all the theatre and dance aspects as well, so yeah.
So when is this on, Dancing in Parks?
Dancing in Parks is on next Saturday. The first one is on next Saturday, called Mindful Contemporary Dance, and it's
the 2nd of March.
Yes, 2nd of March, Saturday 2nd of March, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's at Mount Eden, Tahaki Reserve. So it's actually that mountain, Mount Eden. There's like a big park there. And then the second one is K-pop, and that's the next weekend, Saturday 9th of March, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at Balmoral Potter's Park there.
Yep.
Third one, aerial dance. Carleen will also be there. Saturday 16th of March, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at Point Shiv, the Coil Park over there.
And is there a website people can go to check it out?
Yes, just type in Dancing in Parks on Google or Facebook. It's all up there. It's free entry, so just come at the times that it's said and join in.
Great.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Love Puke is into its second season at the Pump House this week after being on last week.
Yep, so we did Wednesday to Saturday at Eden Terrace, mini lot at lot 23. And now we are at the Pump House Wednesday to Saturday again, starting at 8 p.m. I know tickets are nearly sold out, so get your tickets now. We've been warned. So if you are wanting to come along, please book.
Yeah, get in there.
But yeah.
After those reviews, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, yeah. Even if people were just coming to see Rebecca sit on that toilet, or probably just to see Mark sing, Mark Wilson, I'll give him a shout out. He is an amazing Māori singer.
I'm just interested in coming to the Pump House because I like the bricks.
Yeah, and we're up in the coal bunker, so it's very intimate, very up close.
And beware, that's got challenging themes, people.
Yes.
Challenging themes. And you're going to go into people's houses and challenge them.
That's right, yeah. So this Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then next Monday, the 4th, we'll be in houses. And if you want to come along to a house, you can just email me at this point, utterartsense@gmail.com, or message on Facebook, ArtSense Productions. If you want to come to the public performance at Time Out Bookstore, which is on Saturday the 2nd of March, this Saturday, there's about 3 or 4 tickets left. And there's a lot of bricks there too. So if you're into bricks,
nice.
Come on.
and jazz.
So, yeah, we're next weekend, the 1st to the 3rd of March at Basement Theatre. Our show's on at 8:30 p.m. And you can get your tickets at the Basement website. Also, if you're a Fringe artist and you've got another show on Fringe, you get an artist pass and you can just use that to come in for free. I used it today, so that works as well.
Sweet.
You can get
I'm definitely going to use it to see your show.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, come.
Come along and see it. And how long is it, the performance itself?
Oh, that's a very good question. I have no idea. It's probably about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah. You won't notice the time. It'll be great.
And how long is your performance?
50 minutes.
50 minutes.
Yeah, and you can get tickets on iTicket or go via the Auckland Fringe website as well.
Fringe is so exciting, isn't it?
So good.
It really is. It's just an opportunity to people just to put some stuff out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You might not be brave enough to, not brave enough, but you might not be able to because there's no platform for it.
Mm.
And I suppose you've got that support of the Fringe for promoting the words of it at the moment.
Mm.
So much good stuff going on. So many good productions. Mm-hmm. As part of the Fringe and around Auckland generally, you've got the opportunity to go dancing in parks, to puke over some love, to be lectured at, and
The dance party.
Have a boy crush. Have a boy crush. Wow, you can do that in Love Puke as well, but all girl crush. So support these amazing artists and their work and the other work that's going on in Auckland and get out there and have some fun. There's so much going on. In the wintertime, it's harder to get out in the evening. Beautiful summer nights we have in Auckland. Ha. You can get out there and see the shows. Well, that's an end of another Kick Arts for this week. Thank you for listening. Don't forget you can download this as a podcast 5 minutes after we're off the air, and you can share it with your friends or you can share it with your enemies. I don't care whom. Just share it around. Share the love. And if you're in the arts, keep going. Work hard. Enjoy yourself. Remember, what we do is really, really important to society. People need to laugh, people need to cry, people need to just be entertained. So go and entertain, go out there this week and kick some arts.